This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on Hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
Hello and welcome to The Rest Is Football with me, Gary Lineker, Micah Richards. No, Alan Shearer, unfortunately, is otherwise detained. We're at Anfield.
We're at Anfield,
Micah. So we thought we'd do a little bit of a special, not just on the ground, but perhaps a little bit of the history of Liverpool and our experiences against this great football club at this particular ground. There is something undeniably special about this place, though, isn't there?
But what is it, honestly? So when you pull up, let's take it all the way back. So you're at the ground, you've been in a hotel, and then the drive when you're on the coast to Anfield. I don't know what it is. Subconsciously, you have some sort of fear factor. I don't know why. Yeah. That's me. I'm not talking for you. But then when you arrive at the ground, it's just something. It's almost like, and I've said it before, like they have some sort of force field around it. I don't know if it's the history is so great, the players that they had at times when I was playing against them, but you just come to Anfield and think, we've got no chance.
Yeah.
Imagine feeling that.
I mean, it's not the biggest ground in the country. It's just over 61,000 fans that can get in here. Fifth largest, actually, in the country. It's been their home since 1892, but they weren't the first team to play here. For 7 years prior to that, do you know who played Anfield?
Everton. Everton. I didn't know that.
Yeah. There's something about, obviously, we talk about the atmosphere at Anfield, and I suppose it's hard to understand why it's different here. I think it might have been evoked by Bill Shankly, who was the person that had this incredibly charismatic nature to him that connected with the people of Liverpool, even though he's from Scotland, of course. And he had that connection. He brought out something special, and those amazing images that you used to get when in the days where fans would come and stand, where the cop, the spying cop, as they called it, would sway with people, and the images were incredible. And I think possibly that was the birth of that kind of atmosphere that we talk about when we refer to this place.
Yeah, I speak to Jamie Carragher about this all the time, and he always just says, if you're from Liverpool, it's always just about togetherness. You've always got someone's back, no matter what the situation is. They sort of bring that to the stadium as well. And obviously they've had some great players, haven't they? Great managers as well. And it's almost like everything stops. You know, in certain cities, football's not always the biggest thing. There'd be other things going on. But in Liverpool, it's like, this is the most important thing. That's what he always used to say to me. Whether you're Liverpool or Everton, it's the most important thing, football on the weekend.
And even the derby, even the rivalry here is slightly different to elsewhere, because I remember playing in the the 1986 FA Cup final. And one of my main memories was when we were driving down Wembley Way in the bus, there were fans obviously of both sides, all coming from the same city. But you'd have a dad in a red scarf with his son on his shoulders in a blue scarf. And I remember that image vividly. And that's, I think, unique a little bit to the city. Yes, there's intense rivalry. Yes, they hate losing and they really want it more than anybody else. And it may have changed a little bit over the years as the world's become kind of more divided and stuff. But there is that special bond about Liverpudlians, isn't there?
Well, you lived here. What was it like?
Only one season before they bombed me out. They sold me. But
a top scorer though, wasn't it?
I got about 40 goals. Oh. But anyway,
not mentioned that before.
It was an okay season. I remember one of the absolute highlights of that season for me was playing here against Liverpool in the derby in a game that we won 2-0.
What year would that be?
It was the end of the season, so it would have been 86. So it was before the cup final. And we came here, I don't know, it's about February. And I had a one-on-one with the keeper, Bruce Grobbelaar, and like did a little dinky thick. And I think it was like the 30th goal of the season. I remember running to the corner where the Everton fans were and getting jumped on. It's actually one of the few goals of my career that's still available. You can actually see it. I've seen it on YouTube a few times. Nice little finish. Quite proud of it. I don't want to big myself up too much, but boy, I could finish. But you know what, to do it in here. But it wasn't like, you know, you go to somewhere, but there was so many Evertonians around the ground. It wasn't just a batch in the corner, but you could see them like all over the place because of the nature of the thing. But the Liverpool fans would be quick to remind me that they won at Goodison that season, 3-2, and they beat us in the cup final. And I've told this story many times that it was one of the worst experiences of my lifetime was somebody in a moment of madness decided it'd be a good idea to get both teams in, you know, when you do the open top bus ride in the city, yes, the day after the FA Cup final. And there we were, they'd won the league and the cup double and we'd been second in both and we were in the bus behind. I can tell you where nobody went on the top of that bus. We all stayed on the lower, thinking, where's the conductor? Can we get off at the next stop, please? I mean, it was horrendous, but there were like, tens and tens and tens of thousands of people on the streets. And you know, you definitely never saw a blue scarf that day. It was so cringe, so embarrassing.
I know we've touched on it before a little bit. So obviously you went to Everton and you was top goal scorer. And then Liverpool won the league.
Yeah, I've just said that. Yeah.
That year. No, yeah. I just want to go into this.
Are you rubbing it in?
You've talked about the tour, but you don't talk about your own personal. So You was top goal scorer.
Yeah.
And then you left, and then
I was sold. Yeah. No, the club approached me and they said we've received a fee from Barcelona that we've accepted, and it's up to you. And then, but if somebody does that, you think, well, they don't really want me, then, do they? But I thought it was very strange. But it was Barcelona, and it, you know, I was given a decision. My then wife Michelle, we were, you know, I loved playing at Everton. You know, I know we're getting away from Anfield.
No, but let's make it. Come on, we're in Liverpool.
Yeah, but it was a difficult decision to leave the place.
But Evertonians I speak to,
yeah,
they say you always wanted to leave. So we want to put the story straight.
Well, I think I've put them straight over the years. Okay. And I'm happy to do it again. I would have been perfectly happy to stay. Absolutely. I would have won a lot of trophies with that team. There's no question about that. I think it was a big mistake from Everton. And Howard.
That's
Kendall.
Why they don't like you. No, well,
because they went, but they did go on to win the league that next season. So obviously it wasn't a big mistake. I was jesting. So, and then honestly, it was this is how it happened. I went home, we were talking to Michelle, and then we was on in an hour, and neither of us could decide. And I was going, what do you think? She said, I don't know. What do you think? Should we go? I don't know. What do you think? And in the end, we genuinely got like a cup or something, and we wrote individually on little notes, yes or no to leaving, right? So we both put them in the cups and then we took them out. I know this is bizarre, but it's true. And both said yes. So if they'd have both said no, God knows what happened if one had said yes and one had said no. We might be still doing it to this day. But I don't think, other than perhaps someone like Real Madrid, or in those days the Italian league was also huge, that I wouldn't have wanted to go anywhere else. In fact, I would have been absolutely more than happy to stay at Everton. But and we were supposed to be talking about Anfield. But
yeah, but we're in Liverpool. It's always nice.
Yeah, exactly. What was your record like here playing?
Not great, to be honest.
No. No one's here, I guess.
Never won here. No. Couple of draws. Yeah, the rest of
you. You never won here?
Never, ever, ever. But the way you ask the questions is suggesting you've won here.
Well,
gloating. You've never won here. And then give me a look.
Well, I've already told you I won one game, didn't I? I already told you about the Merseyside derby.
Wait, did you win more than one?
Do you know what? I won here with Leicester. Leicester were actually, in the kind of very early 80s, when I first broke through, were a little bit of a bogey team to Liverpool. And people of a certain age will possibly remember that, even Liverpool fans. I remember drawing 2-2 here and scoring. And we also won here. And I scored as well. But I'll also never forget it. I learned a big lesson the first time I played here. I think it was the 2-2 game. And I'd scored a goal. And then I think it was about 2-2 at this stage, and which is what it finished. And there was a ball knocked up and it bounced off me a little bit, as it did a lot in those days. I had my back to goal and it was going into midfield, and a certain Graham Souness was coming in the opposite direction. And I thought, I'm just going to get this first. Oh, how naive of me. Of course I was going to get this first because he wanted me to. So I go and I get there, my ball, and he goes, whoom, straight over the top, slides down my shin, 6 stitches, off. And he just stood above me. He probably had no memory of this because he did it quite frequently to a lot of players.
What did you say to him?
I said, oh, that's okay, Mr. Souness. I have no idea what I said to him. I was too busy. I was in agony. I was rolling around the floor. My shin was split wide open. Yes, it's okay, Graham. I know you went for the ball.
Yeah.
My ball's not rather that high.
Yeah. Referee, did you not see that?
Yes.
Absolutely disgusting.
Mike, can I ask you, when you do your impression of me, why do you think I'm posh? Leicester.
You are definitely posh.
I'm from Broadstone.
You don't sound like you're from Leicester, ever.
I'm a market trader's son.
And talking about your voice,
yeah,
we've just found something here.
Oh, hello.
Have a listen to this.
It's a bit too much like hard work, and at this time of year, it's much too cold.
What about the atmosphere here? Do you like the market?
Yeah, it's a great atmosphere. I used to enjoy it when I was a kid, working the summer holidays and at Christmas time, what have you. It's a bit special, Leicester Market. I think it's supposed to be the biggest outdoor market in Europe.
What's gone on with your voice? You've changed. You've gone posh on us.
No, I've not gone posh. That's just my accent. As I've moved away and travelled the world and various places.
I've travelled 2 hours from Leicester to London.
And then Barcelona.
For how long?
Three years.
Yeah.
2 years in Japan.
Can you speak Japanese?
Honda Skoshi Dake.
What does that mean?
A little bit. Sugoi desu ne. Subarashi. I think your voice gets a little bit deeper, thankfully, as you get older. So I was quite high-pitched when I was young. I occasionally get high-pitched when I'm excited now. But what's wrong? What's wrong with that voice?
I love your voice.
That Leicester accent.
But I'm just saying.
I can't think what's happened is I've lost most of the accent now. But if I'm back in Leicester sometimes, you know, you start to hear
what's
it.
What's a twang in Leicester? What do they use?
It's like going uptown, Safto. That sort of thing.
Going uptown? What?
Yeah, I'm just telling you something.
Okay.
Something like Safto is this afternoon, that kind of thing.
Oh.
Summer is something.
In Yorkshire, we say going to pub.
Aye, I know you do. Ilky Mon. Going to pub.
Going to pub for a bevy. To local.
Yeah. How the hell did we get around to this?
Your ridiculous accent.
Sorry. I need a breather.
At IKEA, your dream home is a blue bag away. No matter the size of your space or budget, we've got everything you need to turn your dreams into reality. And now with new lower prices on hundreds of our most popular products, bringing the dream home is even easier. Like the gray Strandom wing chair, was $369, now $299. And the IKEA Plus 365 9-piece cookware set was $129.99, now $89.99. And hundreds more. Shop new lower prices at ikea-usa.com today.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs.
Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Welcome back to The Rest Is Football with Micah Richards and myself, Gary Lineker. Alan Shearer's not here, but whilst he's not here, we should talk about Alan Shearer's Anfield record. He won't like this. Played 16.
Well, slow it down.
Played 16.
Played 16.
Lost 11. Drawn 3. Scored 3. Won 1 in a game where he was on the bench and didn't get on.
He's not here.
I know. For Southampton, he played 3 and 1 none, lost 2, drawn 1. For Blackburn, they did win 1, but he was on the bench and didn't feature. They did lose the game here at Anfield, of course, when they won the league, Blackburn, because I think Man United lost it or drew at West Ham or something. And Newcastle played 8, won none, lost 6, drawn 2, scored 1. Hey, Alan. You should have been here. You could have defended yourself, but you can't. I mean, it's obviously a boat ground. My boat ground was Villa Park. Yours, well, it's probably a few.
Probably many of them. half of them, yeah. Your boat ground was Villa?
Yeah. Do you know, and the thing is, I played there in the youth team, Leicester Reserves, Leicester's first team, obviously because they were Midlands club like us. And it's a little bit like Alan. The only time my team won here was in the semi-final of the FA Cup, not here, at Villa Park, in the semi-final of the FA Cup in 1986, when Everton beat Sheffield Wednesday, and I'd done my hamstring, tweaked it, and I was out. So I didn't play, so I sat on the bench, and that's the only time a team that I was involved with won at Villa Park. I played there so many times as well, never scored there and never won there.
Was you doing too much though? Because it was another Midlands
I wasn't side. Doing enough, obviously.
No, but was you overthinking it or
I didn't going use, into the game? No, it wasn't until the end of my career that actually somebody mentioned it. You know what it is? You don't even... somebody told me, said, you know... And I went, no, I never won with the youth team either or the reserves or anything. It's I don't know. It's just weird. And then there are other grounds where you do okay. And Anfield being more...
We're going to go through your record, are we?
I think we've already done that. I already did it. I don't know. I don't want to go on about myself too much, Mike.
One thing I wanted to ask you. Mm. When you was here playing with Everton against Liverpool and you said the cop, we didn't go too much detail into it the first half of it. What was that feeling like? Was you nervous? Did you embrace it?
No.
What was it like?
It's magical. That's what I always think when they talk about atmospheres and, you know, they almost sucking the ball into the goal. For me, I struggled in half-empty grounds where there was no atmosphere because I always think even away from home, you just need something to motivate you. But here, with that noise, you know, even if it's against you, which I've played here many times where it is against you, it's just special. It's just, you know, thrive on it, or you should do. Bigger the atmosphere, the better. It's like, you know, you're playing, you know, you can play in... There are not many places that make enough as much noise as Anfield, but there are when you know, I've played in places abroad, like, you know, played in Turkey where it's like, wow, you know, that kind of stuff. But that, I just think it spurs you on, gets the adrenaline going. Were you the other way? Did you not?
No, it's hard, isn't it? Because we were not... You was fighting for leagues then. When we was coming to Anfield, we was sort of a top four team.
You were better than the Liverpool team during that period, weren't you? Really comfortably better.
Oh, pre-Klopp, yeah.
Where, you know, and it was at the stage where City was starting to be successful. But even then, was it still intimidating coming here when they were perhaps even mid-table?
It was still intimidating. Still, yeah. That Steven Gerrard. He was just... Yeah. When I talk about Steven Gerrard, and when people talk to me about who was like the best midfielder you've played with, and I always say Silva and Yaya Toure for Man City. But for England, Gerrard, he was just a different animal. He could galvanise a whole stadium by putting in a tackle in the first 30 seconds of the game. But not only that, he would spray a 50-yard diag, and then he would shoot from 40 yards. I've never seen a more complete midfielder that I've played with. So when we talk about Yaya Toure, Yaya Toure was really good technically, was fast and strong.
Not necessarily great going back.
But missed the defensive work. So he could play in defensive positions, but he missed the sort of tracking the runners. David Silva, very good technically, open up doors, great passing, great first touch. But Steven Gerrard had it all. And when he was here, he just lit this place up. So even though they wasn't challenged for leagues at that time, it was about the atmosphere and just what he created. And he was the man leading that team. It was so difficult.
They've been lucky to see some greats here, haven't they? Even going back, you know, my time, in Kenny Dalglish. I mean, Sir Kenny now, obviously. He's got a stand named after him here. I mean, he was so good. And his awareness around him and the way he could... You know, like nowadays, you see players on the half turn like Phil Foden. He was like kind of the master of that before it became a thing. Ian Rush, fantastic goal scorer that played with Kenny. You know, Hansen and Lawrenson at the back. You know, Souness, as I've mentioned. But so many unbelievable players from that area. And then they obviously had a period where, having dominated football, then they go through a period, relatively speaking, in the doldrums.
But back then, how does that happen? Now, so we talk about Man United and them winning so many and then going through a spell now where they've tailed off. How does that happen? Liverpool being so dominant and then sort of falling off.
I think they had a period, obviously, that was started by Shankly and followed on by Paisley. And they were incredibly successful. Now, obviously, Paisley had been part of that, and they had that the boot room thing here. I don't know whether you're aware of that. There was, you know, a big thing that Shankly created for like that coaching staff to have a little drink after the game or that kind of thing, and that had kind of garnered something. And then you had Paisley, and then Paisley left, and it's impossible really to have continued success for decade after decade. You know, it's so hard to do that. So I think there was always going to a period where it wouldn't quite happen for them. And then that happened. And then they went through managers rather than the old, you know, we'll give it to the next in line sort of thing. So I suspect it's that. And ultimately, it's hard to get your recruitment right for decade after decade, isn't it? But they've certainly done it again recently, haven't they? With, you know, Klopp's, I mean, you consider where they were when Klopp joined. They were a mid-table kind of squad, weren't they? But where they are now, you know, they compete for every competition.
But what about when Klopp leaves? So that's what the conversation now
exactly
we're having, aren't we?
It's going to be so important who they get in. And I mean, to be honest, I would not want, even if I was interested in management, I would not want the job after Klopp. I'd want the one after that. I think the same will happen with Pep as well, with City. I think it's going to be very difficult for both Liverpool and Manchester City post-eras. I think when you've got a personality so dominant at a football club for so long, everything is about what he does, his staff, his manner. The whole club is run a little bit like, you could say the same for Sir Alex Ferguson at Manchester United, Arsene Wenger at Arsenal. And both those clubs, when they left, have had periods of real difficulty. And I think it's going to be such a challenge for whoever comes in. And the same with Manchester City when Pep goes. And I suspect, I'd be very surprised if he does more than another 2 or 3 years because the intensity of it all. And you can see that Klopp needed a rest. But, you know, the next appointment's big, but it's going to be so hard to follow in those footsteps. I mean, really is. So the same thing could happen to them, Arsenal or Manchester United had. Or it might not. You never know, because here, one thing will never change is that's the supporters and the atmosphere, and they've still got a hell of a lot of good players. Whereas at the end of Manchester United and possibly even Arsenal as well, you know, a lot of the players were getting towards the end of their careers. Whereas I suppose you could say the same thing a little bit about Liverpool, Salah, Mago, Virgil van Dijk, as well as, you know, get to stages where, you know, they might want to do something different. Who knows? What about broadcasting? Have you done you've done a lot of games here? I've done a lot of games here. I mean, one of the most memorable games I can ever remember watching, and obviously I don't mind admitting because it was Barcelona, when they came back, remember, from 4-0. The most extraordinary comeback. And I was obviously a Barca man. That was my team away from the, you know, away from this country, having played there. And it was a tough watch for us Barcelona fans. But I have to say, as a broadcast, it was an incredible thing to do. And talk about the noise, that I've never known anything like that.
When did you start to believe that I could do it?
When it went 2-0.
That's when I started to believe.
Yeah, I mean, because Barca were starting to get a little bit vulnerable in those stages. And Messi had created two or three really good chances for people and they'd missed it. And I started to think, this could happen. But you sort of thought to yourself, Barca would probably still nick one. And that'd do it with the away goals rule, which was then around. It's no longer there, of course. And I thought, wow. And then when Trent's thing on the corner, where he did the dummy, looked away and then came back. That was one of the most intelligent things I think I've ever seen in football. I'm absolutely convinced that would not have been a training ground exercise.
Instinct.
I think so. I mean, I'd love to ask him one day. What do you think?
Yeah, I think I probably agree with the instinct, yeah. I think he's supposed to run there,
yeah,
but not at the time
when
it was supposed to happen.
Yeah.
So I think it was instant, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'd agree with that.
We need to find out, don't we?
Should we get him on a pod? Do you know him? You need to start throwing your weight around, you, Gary Lineker. Fuck's sakes. BBC for 30 years. Yeah. Fire into the lads.
No rush. I'd quite talk. I enjoy talking to you. Yeah, you had any amazing. You must have seen a few amazing ones here.
So I was here on the 2-2 against Man City a couple of seasons ago now. Do you remember the goal? Salah.
Oh, when he goes weaving in. Weaving, yeah, maze, incredible
roll. It was ridiculous.
Yeah. Everyone was saying after that, wasn't that the period where everyone said he's the best player in the world?
That's exactly what it was. I'm next to Jamie Carragher. And you know what? I was doing Sky and Super Sunday and I celebrate if Man City score.
Yeah.
You know, it's part of the game.
Yeah, of course. You don't have to be neutral in football. It's not
well,
politics.
We're supposed to be. On the BBC we are supposed to be.
No, you're not. Not in football.
Well,
everyone knows that we, you know, I'm a Leicester fan. Alan supports Newcastle. I think it's fine. But just be open about it. Don't, like, pretend. And then I think that's what annoys fans. If they think, well, we know you support them. Don't hide it. I mean, people know if Steven Gerrard comes on the TV, they're going to know that he likes Liverpool. So why is it a problem? It's not.
Because he's supposed to be impartial, though. That's the whole point.
No, you give your views honestly as you see the game. But ultimately, in football, we're not impartial, are we? No, you're not. You know, you support. I know you support a few teams. Is that why you?
I knew this was coming. Let me just address this, please, because I feel like it's a common theme when I'm doing broadcasting.
Address it.
A couple of weeks ago, I was on CBS for Champions League, and as a youngster, I was an Arsenal fan.
I know you were.
I were an Arsenal fan. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
But
you're from Leeds.
Yes, so I also like Leeds because I'm from there.
Yeah.
But then I went to Man City at 14 and I became a Man City fan because they give me, you know, the chance in life.
They give you the money.
It always comes back to the money, doesn't it?
But what I'm saying is, that's fine. There's not a problem with that. I mean, it gives us something to tease you a little bit about because you can't make your mind at which team you like the most. But it's fine in football to cheer on a team. Even when you're broadcasting, you know, it's not a problem. I'm serious about this, but it's not a problem.
Right.
You don't have to hide you. I don't think anyone does, you know. When you come here, I mean, they're famous for their sense of humour up here. Everyone's got a waspish comment, hasn't they?
They're sharp. They're very sharp.
I've had a few here. I remember playing against Noto. I was broadcasting. It was I came and then we after the game we went out. We went in the players' room for a little drink. And then we went down. And we were leaving the ground. This little kid on the side of the thing. He's hey, Gally lad. I said, what is it? I said, yeah, what is it? He says, how much you get like for those Walker's crisps adverts? Sorry about the Scouse accent, shit. And I went, well, maybe a bit more than your pocket money. He went, what, more than 20 grand a week? It's about eight. I played for Everton. It was at Goodison, just down the road. Obviously, they're pretty close together, these grounds. And came out at the end of a game, and another little kid came up to me and he went, "Great chest trap today, like." And I went, "I couldn't even remember what he's on about, but I think I did one with chest trap to somebody in the past." He said, "But apart from that, you're crap." They say it as it is. But it's always in a friendly nature. I have to say, whenever I come here, it's always, you know, even though I was an Everton player, even when Barcelona were here, for example, it was jovial, but it's not nasty.
No, they have respect, don't they? Yeah. It's just witty. Yeah. They have banter. Yeah. We love the Liverpoolians, don't we?
We do.
We do.
I
can respect Anfield,
yeah,
can't I?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah. Are they going to win the league?
Well, see what I mean? You push it too far now. No, they're not going to win the league. Yeah. I think it's Man City or Arsenal.
Do you?
Well, you said Arsenal.
Well,
didn't
I,
you?
No, I went for Arsenal.
No, I think Man City will win the league. Yeah. I think it depends what happens on Sunday.
Yeah.
If Arsenal go to the Etihad and win.
Yeah. Let's look ahead a bit to that game while we're here.
Okay. Push forward.
Yeah. Huge. Huge.
Massive.
Probably if Arsenal could get something from the game, that it would.
I don't think it's enough, Gary.
You think they've got to win?
I think they have to win.
You?
I think they have to win.
Well, the truth is that if they don't, City do tend to win every game. apart from
the
that.
Record's incredible. Yeah. Man City are supposedly without Stones.
Mm. Well, likely. That means and probably Kyle Walker as
Kyle
well. Probably.
Walker. Haaland's been up and down in the media saying, "Is he fit? Is he
not really?
Fit?
Is he? Yeah. No, I didn't know that.
Akanji,
goalkeeper.
Edison. So I mean.
Mm. It's now or never, maybe.
I just feel with Arsenal, do you remember last season when they had that opportunity and they had a few wobbles around this time last season and they could go to Man City. If they won that game, put a cat amongst the pigeons. And Man City just walked all over them.
Yeah.
So this is, we're going to see now.
It's a big day.
It's a massive, massive day. And if Arsenal can win, they can win the league.
And who do you want to win that game?
Thank you very much for watching. The rest of
goodbye for me. Not yet. Not yet.
No, I mean
you must have known this was coming.
Of course, I knew it was coming. Who do I want that?
Where's your heart? That's come on. If it's 50-50, say it's 50-50. It's 51-49, isn't it?
No, I mean, I'm Man City ambassador. I have to want Man City to win. But
that's not that. You have to want the team to win.
Well, yeah.
What if Arsenal offered you an ambassadorship tomorrow? Would you take it?
No, I'd turn it down. I'm loyal, aren't I?
You are.
I want Arsenal to do really well because just from the team and Arteta's point of view, how far they've come as a young team. Mm. But Pep and his greatness.
I know.
You know, I want to see him win as much as possible. So I want Man City to win.
Yeah, of course. I mean, without the brilliance, absolute genius of tactician that is Pep Guardiola, they'd have won more here, wouldn't they?
Oh, definitely. What? Three Champions Leagues in the last finals in the last 5 years, I believe. They've won the league. Mm. They've won cups. They've won everything, haven't they? Mm. But that's what I talk about with greatness with Pep Guardiola. I know we're at Anfield, but he set the standard. That's what the standard is, and that's why I talk about Sunday throwing it forward to Arsenal. I want Man City to. I want to see him win as much as he possibly can. Mm. So we look back and think, wow, we're watching this greatness. And if it wasn't for Pep, it would have been all here. Yeah. That's how good a manager Klopp is and this team that he's built. I've seen people talking about when Klopp first sort of mentioned that he was leaving at the end of the season or he's only won one league. But people don't look at the context
of where
they were
to
how far they've come and still competing while trying to get rid of, obviously, Firmino's left, Mane's left. There's been talks about Salah, Henderson has left, the captain, Fabinho. Like, it's the spine of their team and still to be able to challenge and rebuild. It's phenomenal.
Yeah,
it really
some
is.
Some great young talent here as well. So this place will go on and on, and I'm sure they'll see lots more trophies won here. But for us, for now, that's it. So goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.
I'm Anthony Scaramucci, former White House Director of Communications and Wall Street financier.
And I'm Katty Kay, U.S. Special Correspondent for BBC Studios. I've been covering American politics for almost 3 decades.
Welcome to The Rest is Politics U.S., brought to you by Goalhanger.
Go on, tell us, were those donations you made, like Obama in 2008,
Was that idealism? Were you hoping to get something out of these campaigns that would serve your own business interests, for example?
So I think this will either make this podcast incredibly successful, Caddy, or people will be horrified and they'll shut it off right now, because I'm going to be very real with you. The Obama donation, I had gone to law school with President Obama. We were not classmates. I was a few years ahead of him. It was 2007. He was then Senator Obama. I had a check in my breast pocket. I went over to the senator. I said, Senator, I said, you and I didn't really know each other in law school, but I'm about to hand you a big check. Can I lie to my friends and tell them that you and I knew each other in law school? Well, Obama looks at me, had the best smile in American politics since Jack Kennedy.
Forever.
Yeah. He lights up. He looks at me and says, I'll tell you what, if you double the amount of the check, we'll take it back to Hawaii. Okay. And I looked at him. I said, you're done. I had another check in my pocket. I ripped it up. I doubled the amount of the check. And I'm going to tell you right now, I've been to more White House Christmas parties during the Obama administration than the Trump administration.
In this pivotal year for the United States, democracy, and world affairs, Britain's biggest podcast, The Rest is Politics, is launching Stateside.
Uncovering secrets from inside the Biden and Trump inner circles and how they shape the world's most important economy, but also the global economy too.
New episodes are released every Friday morning.
Just search The Rest is Politics US wherever you get your podcasts.